Hi guys, we're here to tell you about our third installment in New York of our I Don't Think So Honey live show. Again, it's 50 comedians and performers taking 1 minute each to go off on culture. It's November 18th at 10 p.m. at the Bell House, part of the Brooklyn Podcast Festival.
Yes, we have amazing, amazing people doing the show. We have Francesca Ramsey, Joel Kim Booster, Akilah Hughes, Survivor Zeke Smith, Sarah Tolomash, and much, much more. You have to buy tickets to the show. It's going to be an amazing gag. It's November 18th, 10 p.m. It's a Saturday night as part of Brooklyn Podcast Festival.
At the Bell House, bitch.
Come on, Bell House.
Ding dong, Las Culturistas calling.
And the game is already afoot in here because we're already talking culture.
Oh my goodness.
And I was nervous, you know, not to use an old wives expression, blow our load a little bit too early, Bo.
As the old wives say.
The old wives have been saying it since the Middle Ages. And, you know, we just got off,
oh,
no pun there, to the thought of being on a plane and watching certain films.
Yes.
And you're saying that this blows my mind. You're saying you would get emotional while watching My Best Friend's Wedding.
Yep.
During the scene where Cameron Diaz does karaoke.
Yes, because what an emotionally fraught scene. The arc of that scene is insane. Like, she's
unbelievable.
Petrified to sing in front of this room of strangers, and then she does it, and then she's triumphant. Like, I get that.
It's a hardship narrative.
You said, I mean, you were like, it's a comedic performance, it's great, and I was like, yeah, but
it's
also, what an emotional ride that she takes us on that ultimately ends on a high note. Like, I don't
there
know.
There you go. High note.
The topography of that.
That's beautiful.
Scene. Gorgeous.
I never thought of it as emotional, but you know what? And you know what else I never thought of?
What?
I never thought to ask about what hot engineer Will's last name was, and then today I found out this gentleman's name is Will Smith.
Now, I don't really want to get into
his
this because
his name is Will Smith.
I think he's gotten this his whole life. I don't think
he hasn't gotten
really
it from us.
That's right. I haven't gotten it from you.
But I don't think
that's enough.
I don't think we need to really go into this. I mean,
fine, bitch.
His name is Will Smith. He happens to have the same name as
I
one
just
of the,
think it's amazing. How old are you?
I'm 26.
26. So Will Smith was not. It wasn't a known thing.
He was definitely known.
He was definitely known.
My parents were just blissfully unaware.
Okay,
and I did think about this. No desire, and I would respect this if you had no desire to change the shortened name to Bill or
no, Willie.
There are so many Williams in my family, I have no desire to change.
It's a family
you
name.
You know what, though? If my last name was Heaton, you would
Matt
I would definitely
Heaton?
Name it Patricia.
Patricia,
my
yeah.
daughter. Some of them you need to go along with. Will Smith, that's just too big.
But
if your last name is Parker and you don't have a daughter named Sarah Jessica Parker,
mm-hmm.
you don't get the assignment.
Sure. You don't get the assignment, which is to name your children after celebrities.
Very clearly. All right.
Okay.
So listen, I kind of guess for me. I don't know about for you, bitch.
I think this is, I mean, this is really, I don't know. This is so, what's the word I'm looking for?
Cathartic?
Cloying for me to say.
Okay.
But like, you know, you and I have loved this person for so many years.
You went to go see our guest do like a character workshop in college.
This was at USC.
Yeah.
At the Fracas Comedy Festival. Billy Domino, former guest of the show, and I were really excited to take this character workshop class. And then the entire time, I think our guest brought just sort of intellectualized Jerry Blank in this way that was so gorgeous, and I was like, this is it, this is all I need to know. And
beautiful.
I think that that still holds true.
I stand by.
Oh god, he's amazing. Let's
talk
go
about
the
what they do.
Okay, so he is the host of his own podcast Minor Revelations, he is going to start his run at the Soho Playhouse of his amazing show Bright Colors and Bold Patterns. I saw this 3 years ago at Ars Nova.
Yeah.
And still, like, remember it vividly to this day. It's so good. Directed by Michael Urie.
Oh, amazing.
And we just talked about Michael.
Yeah, because he's in a show.
Because he's
in a
show.
We're going to hear about that.
Yeah, I can't wait to keep talking about this. And, you know, his TV film credits just are fucking wild.
Right.
It would be a whole brick of text if we had to type this out.
It would just be too goddamn long.
No.
You get fucking exhausted.
And Matt, why don't you tell everybody about...
I would say the children have to know. They have to search the Chloe Sevigny videos. He says it like Sevigny.
Right.
But also, you just don't know what's pronounced correctly and what's not in those videos, honey.
He plays with language in such a way.
He plays with pronunciation in a way that is captivating.
There you go.
Yes.
So let's welcome our guest, Drew Drogi.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, hello. Oh, my goodness.
It's so fun to just sit here and just hear myself talked about and like pretend like I'm not in the room yet.
You have to
like I just flew in. Like, oh, poof. Here I am.
Already?
Oh, hi.
What is that? Like a gorgeous bath.
What a fun little, what would you call that? A diegetic of podcasts?
I love that.
No, that's not the right word.
Digestive?
Digestive.
I love digestive.
An aperitif.
Oh, an aperitif.
It's a beautiful moment in every podcast when the guests can just hear themselves credited.
Yeah.
You know?
It's really nice to look back and go, you know what? I did it. I've done it.
Is it nice or is it mortifying?
It's both. It's horrible.
Yeah.
Well, let's sit here and go, it's fine. No, sure.
So
you just have to like go through all that. Yeah. And also,
the moment where they put you on the spot and they're like, so what do you want us to say?
I know. And you're like, but you are both so lovely. But no, I mean, sometimes it's unbelievable when they have you on and they're like, reading off the back of a cereal and they're like, and what have you done? And they make you feel like they're mad that you're there. And you're like, I don't know.
If they don't really get what it is that you do. I was just on.
That's the other thing. Yeah. If I was playing Chandler on Friends, it'd be easy. You know what I mean? It's like, you love him as this, but it's like, I do so many weird offshoot, insane ragtag.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm glad I'm not on a sitcom.
No, we don't need it.
I'm glad I don't have a regular job. I love just like screaming and begging and throwing pieces of yarn together and making a dream happen.
You do that best. You're the best at that thing. And sorry to like shoehorn in a compliment there. No, okay. And these are just some small little granules of other credits that I think I have to throw in because I think Billy will appreciate this. Planet Unicorn.
Oh, yeah.
Tanya Roberts.
Yes.
With Damiano García.
Yes.
These guys, just Google them. Obviously,
Tanya Roberts.
Chloe is like the big one, but like, you gotta Google. Planet Unicorn, I watched this with some friends. A nice mix of sexualities and sensibilities, and we all still were like, this holds
well,
up
that
10
was,
years later.
Planet Unicorn was the brainchild of my friends Mike Rose and Tyler Spears, and they put that together with me. They just brought me along.
Yeah,
I can't really take credit for any of the writing of that. That was their thing. And that it was for this
it was Channel 101.
Channel 101.
Yeah.
And so it was just this idea that they had and they threw me into it. And it was like it was one of the first viral videos that I ever, definitely the first one I was involved in.
Right.
But it was like kind of when that was kind of starting.
Yes.
And it was unbelievable because we had so many children that were after. Because it's very innocent.
It's so innocent.
It's subversive in the way that as an adult you know what's going on, but there's nothing dirty about it. There's nothing jokey, catty, bitchy at all. It's very sweet, and it's about being sweet and taking care of each other.
The queer references are just like them all drinking boba together, like bubble tea. Like that's like the most overtly gay thing is like them. Being at the beach, like it's so sweet.
Well, kids are gay.
Exactly.
The kids are gay, especially
little boys.
They're so gay.
And these little girls that would just like have these slumber parties, and they all would dress up like the unicorns.
Yeah,
no way.
I mean, it was really
little gay girls.
Magical little gay girls.
Yeah. Gay girls.
Be gay girl. when you go like sometimes like I'll flash back to elementary school or we do children's theater here and there and so we'll go to a school. Those little 6-year-old boys just laying in each other's laps.
Aww.
Just
I know. It's
kissing
so innocent.
Each other's faces. Yeah. It's just like
very innocent.
Stay this way.
I know. Exactly.
Stay.
Because even, you know, it's like if we can teach anything to the next generation, all the hetero boys just to be that way and it's okay.
Yeah.
Because it's lovely and don't like, you know, but because boys crave touch of each other, gay, straight, bi, non-binary, whatever you want to say.
Sure.
They crave it, and like when they can't hug or touch, they punch or they
hard.
You know, because they want that connection so badly. It's a human thing.
Yeah,
and, you know,
I think that you're right. It's definitely a response. Like it makes me so sad because I have a cousin who's growing up on Long Island, and it's very kind of toxic masculinity. And he's 11, going to be 12, and I can hear him deepening his voice.
Uh-huh.
You know, I can hear him talking down here.
Right. Yeah.
When you really listen to it, it's not natural.
Right.
It's something else. It's something you're doing to yourself to make yourself sound like a boy.
Right. Exactly.
Or a man. And that's like 11, 12 years old, which is, I think, when your sexuality starts to kick in.
When it starts to happen a little bit when you're starting to be like, oh, I gotta act like I gotta be too cool.
Yeah.
Hey, what's up? How are you?
Dang.
That thing, and you're like, oh, please.
I don't.
No, don't go. Don't go.
Let it out.
Turn around.
Go lay in your friend's lap. It's
you're
fine.
Made of colors and dreams.
Yes. It's so it, and then yeah, I mean, you see them like he's like, yeah. I want a gun for Christmas. And you're like, no, honey. That's you don't want a gun.
Wait, did your cousin actually say that?
I mean, sometimes he dips his toe
what?
Into these things.
But now there's
he
also
didn't
the
say,
thing
I
where,
gun for Christmas,
but there's also
but
a thing where
like
you know, as a kid, I mean, you know, I loved horror movies and I loved violence
oh,
and I
sure.
loved you know. So I mean, there's also that. So you know, I think like there's also a thing where you're like you're testing the line.
Yeah,
and
yes.
you kind of love. I mean, I loved dark things. Yeah. I loved anything because I. You know, so anything that was just like, you know, kind of subversive and fucked up, I on some level was like this yeah. world, I need yeah. to be in this.
But that's a thing that I think speaks to like an emotional intelligence that a lot of boys don't have. Wait, and speaking of just being emotionally in touch, mm-hmm. Drew walked in. I think, are you still in this emotionally fraught place?
I feel dull, stupid, and bad because I
no.
just.
No.
No, and because of how, because of what happened to me today. That's what I'm saying.
Okay,
what
so,
about
so
I saw?
Walk us through. But like, you just, what did you just, you just came in, you just saw a play.
Yes, I just yes. saw Michael Urie's play, Torch Song. Well, Harvey Fierstein's play,
yes,
right. Torch Song, starring Michael Urie.
Yes.
And that's why I'm saying I feel dull, stupid, and bad because it just melted me in yeah. all the best ways.
Yeah.
It is essential viewing. If you're in New York and you have to see it because, I mean, I remember I saw the movie when I was in college. Mm. There's so many lines from it that you won't believe that were quoted from that. You'll be like, I know that line because people have quoted that
wow.
play for 30 years. And it is like I came in and said, it's our glass menagerie or
yeah,
our
right.
town. It's that seminal and it's yeah. that. Important and it's funny and it's heartbreaking. It punches you across the soul. It is so good.
God damn it. Now I have
and
to go.
Michael
and
just
go.
Really makes it his own. I mean, it's yeah. like, you know, you can't live in it without feeling Harvey there. And
oh.
and Michael really does honor Harvey, but gives it such his own spin. And but it's three pieces. It's long. It's 3 hours. You're mm-hmm. you're in for an evening of theater.
Right.
But mm-hmm. it flies by, but you're getting 1971, 1974, and 1980, and our culture,
gosh,
and
yeah,
seeing who we were and what we were and how timely it is now.
Mm.
And there's stuff that happens in the play that I was like, if this was set in the 90s, I wouldn't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's set in the 70s, it actually could be happening now. With all the sexual fluidity and all the stuff that's kind of happening, there's unbelievable stuff that is like, that AIDS really changed. I
yeah,
mean, for lack
yeah.
of putting it in another way, that like in the 80s and 90s, we were in a different space. And this play is just before that.
Right,
and this
right.
play is not aware of AIDS yet. And because
oh
it, you know,
just everything was freewheeling.
Yet,
and yeah.
yet there's so much of what's going on now
mm-hmm.
in the play. It's unbelievable.
Wow.
And Mercedes Rule, come on, Mercedes
Rule. Oh,
wow,
Rule. Come on. That's the children have forgotten, Mercedes
yes,
Rule.
I might have
know.
Been a child
have
that
you
have forgotten.
Ever, have you ever seen The Fisher King?
Brilliant.
No.
She won the Oscar. She
won
Best
the
Actress.
Academy Award.
For
right.
And she is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And she plays Michael's mom. She played the role that Estelle Getty played in the original production.
Yeah. Because
you know that, if you know this story, but that Harvey saw Estelle Getty in a community theater production of something in New Jersey.
Uh-huh. This is
and
way pre-Golden Girls.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah,
this
yeah,
is
yeah.
before. This is how Golden
Obviously.
Girls happened for
sure.
her because
uh-huh.
she got, anyway, he saw her in the show. He was like, you have to play my mom.
Mm-hmm.
She had no real professional credits. He put her on Broadway
oh my God.
To play his mother in this. And then from Torch Song Trilogy, Estelle Getty got Sophia
yeah.
on the Golden Girls.
Wow.
Which, and she was just brought on as a guest star because originally in the pilot of Golden Girls, it was Dorothy, Rose, and Blanche.
Right.
And then the gay housekeeper. And
yes.
then Cleo, I want to say his name was.
Uh-huh.
I'm wrong. Coco. And then Sophia was the guest star. She was coming to visit. And then they were like, we love the mom.
Yeah,
and it's the 80s,
it.
So we don't need gays on TV.
Yeah,
so
right,
bye.
Right.
So that, anyway, but yeah. you know, that was Estelle Getty's like story. Like,
unbelievable.
It was just,
I didn't know that. I mean,
yeah.
God, like, just talking about Harvey, it's like, what, he's like one of like the great gay benefactors, I think.
Absolutely.
Of, like,
when all the Drag Race queens honored him.
Yeah. Oh, so emotional.
That was, did you see that? That
no,
was,
I didn't
okay,
see
so
that.
They had,
was it on Drag Race?
It
was at the Logo Awards or something.
It could have
right?
been like the New Now Next Awards or something
yeah,
like that. He
yeah.
got some sort of like lifetime achievement
uh-huh.
honor. And actually, Ginger Minj, the drag queen,
yes, wonderful.
Performed this number for him, and it was so. She was so like in her body. She was so centered. She was. So, it was
yeah,
a beautiful
yeah.
performance.
Such a good tribute.
Like it was. It was like
beyond what you thought like Ginger Minj was capable of. Like,
but she's
it was
musical theater.
But yeah,
girl.
That was yeah. a real performance. I said, I turned to Henry. I was like, she could be fucking on Broadway.
Yeah, yeah.
She could play.
I've heard that about.
Mama.
I've heard that about her. And you really have no idea from Drag Race what those queens can
oh,
do
absolutely.
And can't do.
No, right.
Because that show really does edit these stories that, about these some of the. And so you yeah. really don't always know. Sure. You watch them and you're like, I don't really know about that one. And then you see them and they blow you away.
Of course.
Yeah.
But yeah, I saw Harvey do Hairspray, and you saw him do it as well.
Yeah,
right?
yeah,
and
that was incredible.
I saw him do it at the Hollywood Bowl.
Wow.
And it was like I'd never understood Harvey Fierstein until I saw him live.
Yeah.
Like I had seen the movie Torch Song Trilogy. I had seen him, obviously, Birdcage and a million other things, and mm-hmm. I always loved him. But it wasn't until I saw him live, his ability to, that deadpan, that stare, to hold a yeah. look.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
The whole room is filled with almost no effort.
Yep.
It's crazy. He really, like, you're hanging on his every move
yes.
when he
Amazing.
Is on stage. He is a uniquely talented
yeah.
performer.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah. And that was in a show full of incredible people. And you walk away and you're like, that was...
Yeah.
That had to even inspire them. You're talking about, like, this is like a young cast of, like, Matthew Morrison, Laura Bell Bundy, mm-hmm. Marissa Jarrett Winoker, I believe... Carrie Butler was in that.
Yeah, yeah,
Carrie
yeah. She
Butler.
Was Penny. Yeah. She was Penny Pinkerton.
So this is like
yeah.
all these people that this
young,
was just the surface
people.
Of what yeah. you see their talent. Mm-hmm. Also, there was one actress, and I just want to toss this out for this actress. She played the trailer trash mom in that Minnie Driver movie where she does the pageants.
Beautiful. here's a deep cut.
Okay, yeah. here we go.
Drew Drogi was an extra in Beautiful.
No.
Yes.
Tell us
he was.
Everything.
Come on.
Directed by Sally Field. I sure was.
Sally Field directed that movie.
Sally Field directed that movie and with Minnie Driver and the girl from the Pepsi commercials.
Yes.
Oh my
yes.
God.
What's her favorite? Jesse Eisenberg's sister.
Hallie
Eisenberg. This is.
Is
thick.
This Drew's first? I'm sorry, I'm referring to you in the third person, first screen credit, or you, you're an extra?
Somehow it didn't end up on IMDb. No, it was right when I moved out to LA and I was
oh
and
my
I
God.
And I got some random thing to do extra work that day and I was like, why not? And then I saw Sally Field was directing. I was like, oh, I've made it. I'm working with Sally Field
Sally
today.
Sally Field working with her.
But yeah, I was like in the audience when she, you know, when she sang the
tonight
fine,
you're
to your mind
completely.
I was in the audience.
You.
If you look really hard, you'll see a very tired, terrifying, skinny twink Drew Drogi.
Let me tell you the best scene from that movie. The best scene from that movie is when they put Minnie Driver and like the blonde bitch who was, I think, married to Pete Sampras, the tennis player, Bridget Wilson Sampras.
Oh,
think
sure,
that's
sure, sure.
Or
yeah,
maybe
yeah.
it's another actress. I don't know. But one of those. So they put them in like a glass box
okay.
so they can't hear the other debate question. And Minnie Driver is, of course, is hitting with the secret that she, of course, is the mother.
Uh-huh,
and she
right.
shouldn't be competing because mm-hmm, the rules mm-hmm. say she can't. And she's deciding whether or not she's going to share that secret. And she turns to Bridget Wilson Sampras and she says, is it true? Do you really like roller coasters and long walks on the beach? And do you really speak Spanish and French? Because if that's true, then you deserve to win. And Bridget Wilson Sampras turns her head. She takes a beat. She turns her head. And she says in a different voice than she's used the whole movie. She goes, what difference does it make?
Oh.
And Sally Field, to know that Sally Field is responsible,
yeah.
I'm gagged forever.
The bitch gets it. She gets it.
The children have forgotten
yeah,
Sally Field
they,
as a director.
They need to know. Yes.
Yeah.
Children, if you
make?
Need a director for your film, call Sally.
Get in touch with her
she
son.
She can do it.
Her son is on Tinder.
Yes, he
you
is.
Can reach, you can reach her through him. That's amazing.
Her agent.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my
God.
Isn't that, yeah, crazy.
It's
That's
such
so funny
a,
that was your...
It's such a fantastic movie.
Yeah.
It's in the worst. In,
oh,
like,
yeah,
in that
yeah,
kind
yeah.
of way where
sure,
you're
sure,
like,
sure.
no.
Yeah, why not?
But right? it was on Stars a lot.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
The perfect yeah. Stars movie.
The perfect
yeah,
Stars movie.
Drew, we're going to ask you what we ask all of our guests, which is...
Because we've gotten some background
we've
now.
Gotten
now
some background.
We know.
Yeah, now you know.
You alluded to horror earlier, but feel free to like venture outside of that. What is the culture that made you say culture is for me? And don't limit this to movies or media necessarily, but like, you know, books, where you grew up...
Something
yeah,
set you
I mean, there's
on the
so many.
Journey.
Yeah, of course. And obviously, everybody has things.
Eversley,
I'm drunk,
everybody.
Y'all. Can I sleep? The first thing I thought of when you sent me that question, uh-huh. and I thought I was like, the first thing I thought of was the old Batman TV show.
Oh, that's not the first time.
Must.
Yeah. So yeah, somebody else said that.
That's not the first time somebody said that on this show.
Yeah. Okay.
Actually. Yeah.
And I mean, I am obviously not old enough to remember when it came out because it was like late '60s. But I saw the reruns in the '80s, and you know, and I, as a kid, would run home. It wasn't currently running, so I was so excited about what that rerun was going to be that day. Yeah. But there was something about those colors.
Oh, yeah.
Those villains.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I loved monsters growing up. So anything like Cesar Romero, and like I could see his beard coming through the makeup and his Joker, you know, I was like, this is so weird and fucked up and perfect. And I also loved both Catwomen, but I never knew if it was going to be Julie Newmar or Eartha Kitt. So I was like, who's that going to be?
Good and option, then, either way.
You know, and I loved Yvonne Craig. I loved Batgirl.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So when they introduced Barbara Gordon into the show, I was like, so it was just like the purples and the yellows and the bangs and the pops. Mm-hmm. And I loved the, that was a cliffhanger. And the villains all had like fun. It was like, you know, Vincent Price is the Eggman. And,
And
Joan Collins was the siren. And she was like an opera singer that sang people to death.
That is inherently gay.
Joan Collins was on that show.
She was a villain on the show. Yeah, they had everybody on there. They had everybody they could, you know. And, you know, and I remember as a kid being like, and I was fascinated by it. But, I mean, I also watched like Masters of the Universe and other 80s things. And we watched, you know, Family Ties and the Cosby Show and all that stuff growing up. But I was obsessed with this show that was really like my parents' generation. And I was sort of like, didn't understand why nobody else wanted to talk about Batman.
Yeah. You know what? For me, looking back to my childhood, because I was very into Batman as well, although it was kind of the movies and the atmosphere that I presented, there was an animated show on in like the
90s.
There
was an animated
show. Mark Hamill was
Mark
the Joker.
Hamill was the Joker. Yes. Sure. Yep. Yes. But for me, what always grabbed my attention and made me excited were the villain origin stories. When you provide me with a good villain origin story, or even just
Michelle
like a well-presented...
Yeah.
Come on.
Michelle Pfeiffer, maybe the best one.
The best one.
Robbed of an Oscar.
Robbed of an Oscar!
100%.
Yes.
We say, honestly, any movie she comes out with now, if they decide to do that, like she's been around for a long time, give her an Oscar, I'm on board.
Absolutely.
Give it to her for whatever.
Absolutely.
Give it to her this year.
She's amazing.
With her mother. Who cares? Is she pretty good in it? Good. Give her an Oscar. You took it away from her. So
who won that year? I mean, what was the?
That would have been Batman Returns would have been 92.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so the best film was
Unforgiven.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, no, Unforgiven was 93, I believe. Silence of the Lambs was 91.
Yeah. Then there was Forrest Gump in 94.
That was 94.
She would probably
was Unforgiven. But then in 92, supporting actress, that's a deep, that's going to be a real
Pulp
deep
Fiction,
cut.
Oh, Pulp Fiction was competing with Forrest Gump. Yeah, I remember
that. So Mercedes Rule was
oh my God, it all goes back
92
to
best actress to bring her back.
I think Mercedes Rule was best supporting.
I think she was lead. She was
Can we
best
look it
actress.
Up?
I'm almost positive.
But then,
look it up.
So supporting would have been somebody like, oh boy.
The fact that we even got here, kudos
to us. Look at us without our smartphones.
We've talked about like sometimes like how that can become, well, actually, let's talk about the Oscars. Because this year is going to be a big fucking change for the Oscars. Because Weinstein
is gone, baby.
And I was reading something about the Oscars today while we get this answer.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading that this could be the year where all logic in terms of what we thought about the Oscars could be thrown out because people are done. Like, Get Out could get nominated and win.
I hope it does. It's one of my favorite movies of the year. I thought it was brilliant. And I saw it 2 days in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just by chance that I was with friends and who were going again. I was like, I loved it so much. I'll watch it again.
Yeah.
And the second time, it really holds up. And, you know, it's one of those movies that's like so fun the first time through. But then you're like, knowing what's going on the whole time, it's funny, it's terrifying with brilliant performances, it's a crack smart script.
Yeah.
It's one of the best movies of the year. I would love for it to get nominations and win. Why not?
You know,
great.
What would be a real gag was if they're not going to give a best picture because they still have their hang-ups about that, whatever, like their genre hang-ups, or honestly the racism in the Academy is like a very real thing just because they're majority white. Like they just
Also the industry, like there's very few films that, you know, it's like they have very few that they actually see. The problem too is it's a lot of old white people who don't see things. They don't see movies on Netflix.
Right, right, right.
Like so they Beasts
of No Nation or whatever, that brilliant performance. Yep. They just didn't watch it.
Uh-huh, right. Uh-huh.
I think there's also there are factors like that. I don't think they're overtly racist as much as just they're limited in what they get access to.
And when they have so much,
yes,
they're going to pick the stuff that appeals
to
them.
And they have so much old white man stuff in front of them.
Exactly. And so that's why I feel like
it's our job to change all that.
Exactly. And you see that every year the Academy, like the invitations they send out, getting more diverse. I think like if they were to just, if Jordan Peele were to win Best Director.
Oh my God.
You know,
God,
that would be amazing. Or even be nominated and Greta Gerwig, Lady Bird, like come on, acknowledge good. You saw it and you said it was fucking amazing.
Cried twice. And I'm not like, I love Greta. I didn't love Mistress America, but that was Noah Baumbach. But God, Lady Bird fucking destroyed me. Okay.
So who won Best Supporting Actress?
And this is you're gonna be like, oh, of course, and you know we're gonna have our thoughts.
Oh my gosh,
Marissa.
Yeah, Marissa, 100%.
Okay, she's brilliant.
She's brilliant,
and
brilliant.
She's gotten so much flack for that Oscar, and
no
I
way.
Will say she deserved it.
100%.
She's a genius
in
that movie.
This is refreshing. I'm glad you guys are saying this.
I thought she was incredible in that movie, and also given the idiot ass Faye Dunaway this year when she said La La Land.
Yeah.
You know that Jack Palance didn't mess up, because for years they were saying Jack Palance was old and crazy and he read the wrong name.
No way.
No, if he'd read the wrong name they would have corrected him.
They would have said something.
She won the award full out. She was wonderful.
Yep.
And she has proven herself time and time again.
Tenfold.
I mean, in the bedroom. Before the devil knows you're dead.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yes. The wrestler.
The wrestler.
I would have voted for her.
Yes.
I would have voted for her, honestly. And it was Penelope Cruz that won that year.
Oh, right.
And, you know.
Also great.
Yeah.
I will support her.
Yeah. We'll support Marissa.
For me, it's about Marissa. Always.
Yeah.
Now, there was also some conversation about, for Best Actress, they were saying, like, you know, like everyone was very gung ho about Kate Winslet there for a while for this new Woody Allen movie, and now you just hear people stop talking about it.
Because
it's gotta suck so much when it is that when it's you're just the actor in the equation and you're giving the performance and you're Kate Winslet and you're like, you know, I also believe she probably doesn't care about getting an. She has an Oscar.
She has one.
She's amazing. I don't know anyone who says Kate Winslet's a bad actor.
No.
You know, or whatever. I mean, I think she's thoroughly.
Yeah.
Earned.
She's thoroughly lauded, and she's been that. You know.
Yeah. No. Yeah. I'm just saying, like, in terms of like things might change.
Yeah.
It's like even the Woody Allen factor.
Yeah.
It's like you just see like the pundits like stop talking about that.
Yeah.
You know. Now they're saying this could be the year where it's like you see a thriller nominated again for Best Picture. Mm-hmm. You see a movie, perhaps
well,
two.
I don't understand why we have such double standards. Because to me, the woman who was the mom in The Babadook gave one of the best performances of the year last year or two years ago when that came out. I was like, that deserves a nomination. Like, we give people these awards for these sweeping period piece. You wore a wig and, you know, you wore a nose or whatever. And I mean, again,
I'm not even saying that specifically.
I mean, I love her and I think
and
she
also
deserves, I mean,
fine performance.
100%.
But, you know.
But I'm just saying, like, why are thrillers or comedies considered less valid? I think, you know, that it all should be part of the equation.
And the interesting thing is that wasn't always the case. Like, if you look back in the 70s, you got,
I mean, even with Marissa, that's a great example. Marissa.
Right. I mean, like, there's always small exceptions. It seems like the general rule is, though, there's those categories. And if you kind of play this part, like, for example, if you are playing a supportive wife and the film is good, your chances in Best Supporting Actress look very good.
Yeah.
Right.
But there was Ellen Burstyn in the 70s was nominated for playing the mother of Regan.
In The Exorcist, yes.
Right.
And for
Carrie,
Best Actress.
Both Ken Carey, Piper Laurie, and Sissy Spacek were nominated as well. And they did.
Sissy.
It seemed, and also you know. Robert
Sissy's
Shaw.
Sissy's never won.
Robert Shaw for Just. No, she has. She won
has.
For
Coal
Miner's
Daughter.
Oh,
yeah, of course. Okay.
Now, screaming at that.
Sissy never won.
No, she did. Coal Miner's Daughter. It's such a thing that we have us gays, isn't it? This inherent knowledge of this award.
And women.
And
it's about women and their awards.
I don't care about
the women. We really don't care about the men with the awards they wore. We're like, the women and their, give them a statue.
Yes, they need it. I want to stand them. I want to see them stand and hold it high.
I know, I love it, but I love it.
Prior guests, friends of the show, John Early Cole School, did an interview for Kate
Never
Boy
heard
Mac.
Of them. They
Never
sound
heard
like
of
trash.
Them. They don't
they
sound
like
talented.
Real nightmare. Hacks. Garbage bags.
Yeah. Hacks, both of them. They did an interview in Cake Boy Magazine, which is like a Brooklyn Queer Magazine, talking about why women, why is it exclusively women? Should we feel bad that we're only scrutinizing women? But it's like, no, it's like, but if you're going to ask any of us about who our favorite male actors are, we're just going to be like, I don't know, fucking Nicolas Cage.
I know, exactly.
Have those answers.
I don't even know which
ones. I think it's important, though, that we start the conversation as gay men about gay men. I know sounds really self-involved and navel-gazing to be like, we need it more, but we don't lift each other up.
You're right.
Thank God we lift women up, because, you know, straight male cultures had to learn from us, like, hey, be nice to women, lift them up, celebrate them. But I had this moment earlier this year at an Adam Lambert concert.
Mm-hmm.
I saw him as the, you know, lead singer of Queen. He's touring with Queen.
Yeah, that's right.
It was one of the most incredible things I've ever seen.
He's brilliant.
He's amazing.
And I was like, you know what pisses me off is that in our culture...
Mm-hmm.
We pick a gay bar.
Yep.
Yeah.
And if some fair to middling, you know, CW straight star walked into a gay bar,
mm-hmm.
we would be losing our minds.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my God. Oh my God. That's so and so. He mm-hmm. was on 3 episodes of, you know, fill in the blank. If Adam Lambert walked in, our reaction would be like, ugh, this bitch.
Yeah.
And we should be laying down the red carpet for. You know, and I just think that that's something that we're not there yet. We have a weirdness about accepting among our own royalty. I mean, and again, like, just celebrate what the gay men are doing.
We agree.
Too.
Are you going to quote someone?
I was just going to mention, even with the announcement of Boys in the Band, you saw a little bit of this. And, you know, to be honest with you, I guess maybe like, my instinct a little bit was to be like, ugh, those four again.
Right.
But they're all amazing actors.
But they're all incredibly talented.
Yes.
They're going to do a great fucking job.
They have a theater experience.
And you know
already.
What?
Absolutely.
Yeah. That, you know what's fucking brilliant? They could put four gay men in that cast, and they're all stars, and they're all going to be amazing, and that means something, because you know what? 5 years ago, maybe even 2 years ago, you know half that cast is straight.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you have these people who... have all deserved it, who have all worked their ass off, who are going to kill it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think every one of us is a little bit like, ugh, why not me?
Right.
But, oh my God, they're honestly some of the greatest. I mean, I saw that lineup and I was like, we're also lucky to get to watch this.
So lucky.
These guys are
fabulous.
I mean, I've been blown away by all of them in different ways. And I just, and yes, we're telling our stories.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in front of people, and you absolutely, we have to acknowledge that moment. But you're right. We didn't even take a moment to say, look, an all gay cast, outcast of stars in a huge Broadway show.
Yep.
We immediately go into, oh, these bitches
again.
Of
course it's them.
Of course it's them.
Oh, is it Ryan Murphy produced?
Like,
you could have
like,
said
you know what?
That.
There needs to be, you know, opportunities for more. And there needs to be, you know, and it's happening, but. Yeah,
it is happening.
A couple things. I wonder, well, one, like, yeah, I had that same reaction to Boys in the Band. And I feel like this just means only good things for other things. Because right now it's like Call Me By Your Name's going to come out. And it's like, okay, cool. But also, both of these actors are straight.
Again.
And so hopefully that'll like ripple out into these other industries. But
right.
And the second thing is, I think, I don't know, this might not be a fair thing to say.
Go for it.
But is part of that like, instinct to be like that bitch, like is it linked to it all with what Drew sort of just said just now, where, and I feel this way too, where it's like, why not me? I feel like that's part of it, right?
It might be, and it might be I have such a weird relationship with the familiarity mm-hmm. in our community,
yeah,
because part of me loves it. Part of me loves that I can go into a gay bar and if people know who I am and what I do, I'm approachable. If they tell me they like what I do, it makes my night. It's like so great. I love it. And mm-hmm. I love that, like, I'm here. I got here yesterday and I went to Julius and somebody came up and was like, I like your podcast. And we talked for a minute. And it was like immediately I was like, you know, and if, you know, I feel like I always want to be able to have that and that relationship.
Right.
And I love that. And I feel like if, I don't know, like if I was like, a movie star or something, somebody might look across the room and go, oh, I can't go talk to him.
Sure.
He's too big of a, you know, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I do think that with that comes the next person to come up and immediately go into this kind of bitchy familiarity that I'm like, oh, you haven't earned that.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't have an answer for that, but sometimes I can get my feelings hurt by a stranger who was genuinely trying to compliment me.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, I play a lot of horrible asshole characters. And so I think people think like, oh, I'm going to come up and just say the bitchiest thing and you'll find it hilarious. And I'm like, no, I'll just start sobbing. Yeah. That's me. But, or I'll just get weird and have to shut down and start talking too much and run away.
No, that's...
But, so I know it's like a thing where, we are very, I think we feel very close to it.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, every gay person's invited to every gay thing, like, yeah. just in yeah, parties. Yeah, yeah. And we see each other. You know, it's not weird to right. see famous gay people at, right. you know, out at bars and at parties and because we're all, like, in the world together.
Sure, sure.
So you do feel a little bit like, oh, I know this bitch.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
some
yeah.
of that's not terrible.
Right.
Totally.
I just think it's like, and again, I would never, you know, what I was saying earlier about, like, you know, like someone walking in and be like, don't ever go up and talk to them. It's like, yeah, it's wonderful when people come up and say something nice and support. But I do think there is still part of us where we think, you know, we think there's a glass ceiling mm-hmm. and we think we have our, we have our gay thing. And mm-hmm. then our goal is to ultimately be with the straights. Our
yes,
goal is
sure.
ultimately to be accepted by straight culture.
Yep, yep.
And straight culture, at least the straight people that I know and care about, love us and don't care
yeah.
and don't at all look at us that way.
Yep.
They don't categorize us that way. We categorize us that way. And yeah. I think that's something that's very important for us to not look at straight people and say, oh, you're because, yeah, they're always going to be horrible, homophobic people. But
right.
who we don't know those. We don't hang out with those people. Let's mm-hmm. be honest.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Our straight friends are like the first ones to like embrace and include and
sure.
accept who we are and what yeah. we're about and not categorize us as their gay friend. Just like we're taught like. Don't talk about your black friend. You know what I mean? They're taught in the same
totally.
sort yeah. of vernacular, like see them as a person.
Right.
But sometimes in our own culture, we bottle each other up in a way.
Because you feel entitled to that attack.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like they're part of me, so I can judge them, honey. Like
yeah.
I know where they come from, and so I'm gonna read them to filth. And it's really what it is you feel that there's only so many spots.
Yes.
Or it's that there's some element of I'll say just because from firsthand experience I'll say some element of self-loathing, some mm-hmm. element of. Well, there's this shared experience that we start off at anyway, and that I can sort of I've earned the right when you haven't to
right, right.
Because you've really touched on something. I feel like gay culture hasn't really recalibrated to this like socialization. It's like yeah, like okay. So Joel and I, my friend Joel and I just did a show in Philly. I just came back today, and you know we were out at the bars last night. It was really fun. Philly has a very nice, what I'll say, with no pejorative at all. Unpretentious gay nightlife scene.
Mm-hmm.
So welcoming, so fun, so nice for everybody. But people came to the show, and then we ran into some people afterwards at the bars, and they would come up and be like, or even just tweet at us things like, do you two fuck each other? Or is that like, they would just say these really offhand things, and I'm like, and I think, I don't know if that's in that same neighborhood of like people.
Because you're Asian?
I don't know, because they're like, do you guys fuck each other? Because that would be like my masturbation fantasy for sure. Like just, you're like, what?
Fetishism.
Right.
I mean, yeah, I mean, it's problematic on a lot of levels, but just like you.
Also like two comedians I know and love and.
Right, right.
All this weird, how strange.
It's like what a weird thing to just sort of lead with, and then, you know, it's. You sort of have to be like, okay, I don't know. Like, one, great that you feel familiar enough with us to... Well, not great, but, like, you feel familiar enough with us to say mm-hmm. that thing. And then, but on the other side of that, it's like, oh, but how inappropriate. Like, you haven't earned that. I mean,
well, right,
no one ever
right.
does.
They don't obviously don't know how to communicate.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that's it.
So that's like, that's, like, a little bit of a toxic thing. But I think, like, it is a little bit of both. It's... I'm jealous and I don't know how to deal with that. And also, I feel super familiar with you just because we have this thing in common. And
right.
I don't have that with a lot of people,
right.
maybe.
Right.
And
right.
so I think you're going to get it.
Yeah.
And specifically, I also think, and you touched on this a little bit as well, but with that cast, there's a little bit of like a beauty standard.
Oh,
right?
Sure.
Which
sure.
we don't talk about
sure.
a lot, which is because... You don't get there because the first thing you say is like, well, there's not enough gays, obviously, or of course them. But then when you start looking at the cast and, you know, people have called Ryan Murphy out on this a little bit. He certainly has like a type that he hoists to the front.
Sure.
And
sure.
So you look at that cast and you're like, oh God, like that's the bar.
Right, right.
And it can feel very right. far away. But again, that's just us getting, I guess,
no,
a little bit of a taste
just
of what
like,
women get
think,
all the time.
I think the thing for us all to keep in mind is this is only going to open doors.
Exactly.
For yeah. It's only going to bring, first of all, millions of people to see this story that they didn't know before.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's going to inspire smaller productions of this play
yeah.
around the world. You know,
oh, yeah,
and
definitely.
Then it's going to open up other opportunities for completely different shows, completely different
yeah.
films, pieces, work. It's just an added, it's just adding.
Sure.
It's not detracting.
Yep.
Right.
And so, and it doesn't mean because you're not in The Boys in the Band with Ryan Murphy that you don't matter.
Yeah,
that
yeah, yeah.
yeah, exactly. That was your time. That was your chance.
yeah.
But I do think we all have, there was a part of, you know, even to be totally honest, to admit when I saw that, I was like, oh man, I want to be there with, you know.
Yeah,
and you're like, that makes no sense. Like, relax. yeah. Like, because uh-huh. I am ultimately so thrilled and so happy, but I think we all have that collective
yeah,
feeling.
Totally.
I'm just being totally, you know, it's like, no. ultimately, it's like, it's a wonderful thing, and it's because it's like, no, this just means that they're making it possible for you to have a voice as
yeah,
well.
Right.
You know, they're
yeah.
finding a place at the table for you as well.
And look,
you know?
And you're already so close to that table, and you're at this other great table, like equally great table.
I'm at table 19.
Table 19
Anna
by the
Kendrick
DuPont brothers.
And, it's rule and June Squibb.
It's rule number 23. Enjoy
the table you're
at. Especially if June Squibb is at that table, too.
Oh. My mom, my God, I tapped in.
You tapped yes. in. My mom fucking loved Table 19 and she saw it on the plane.
Of course.
Okay. We have to take a quick break.
We come back, we're going to talk about Bright Colors and Bold Patterns. Of course, the Chloe videos.
Yeah.
Oh, God, this
and
is already
so
off to a great
more,
start.
And so much more, you stupid bitch. All right, bye. Hold on, we'll be right back.
Ooh, Matt, I'm so excited for our next I Don't Think So Honey Live.
I'm very excited.
Back to basics.
Back to basics. I mean, we've just been through the cult war, which really has us, you know, battered and bruised. Ugh. But we are ready to bring back the love fest, the cathartic moment that is I Don't Think So Honey. And this cast.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. We've been trying
to
get some of them for a while.
Yes. And can you believe after three shows, even after two shows.
Yeah.
The star power is still strong.
And not for nothing, but these are going to be 50 people that have never done the live show before. So if you thought we only knew 100 people, bitch, no, there's 50 more in our little black book.
And there's more where
that's
that
right,
came
we
from.
Fucked them all. we got Joel Kim Booster, hottie.
Hottie. We've got Francesca Ramsey,
hottie. We got Sarah Tolomash, you've seen her on Colbert,
hottie.
Oh my God. Mike Kelton, fucking hottie.
Hot
as fuck.
What a hot
Oh my
fucker.
God. Brandon Scott Jones, like fucking
hottie.
Hot. Oh my God, so hot. We got Akilah Hughes. Oh my God.
Hottie.
I'm dripping wet, so hot.
Oh my God, I love
everyone's
this
so
group.
Fucking hot. Ooh. Ooh, it's part of Brooklyn Podcast Festival. Oh my God, I'm gonna climax.
I'm wet for the Bell House. We're gonna be at the Bell House. This is our first show at the Bell House.
First show at the Bell House. I mean, our home has been Little Phil. We're ready to, you know, pack the capacity at the Bell House,
yes.
People. This is gonna be so fucking exciting. I'm actually so excited. We've never hosted a show here. We're so glad.
It's going to be great. It's part of the Brooklyn Podcast Festival
yeah,
on
so
November 18th at 10 p.m.
Yeah, Saturday, November 18th, 10 p.m. This is going to be so, so fun. You're going to, if you miss this show, you'll feel
insane.
You'll feel insane.
You'll feel insane.
You'll be at home with the FOMO of a homo.
A FOMO of a homo. And if you come, guaranteed, you are going to be to us a hottie.
A hottie.
Okay, oh my God, we're back with Drew. Amazing first half. Let's get into his show. Can we call it a play?
Yes, I mean, please.
I loved it.
That's the title of another play. Let's call it a play.
Ew, that sounds like a Noel Coward. Like, yeah. We can't come up with it. We have a couple ideas. Let's call it a play.
I was in a horrible like reading of a play like years ago, and they were like came to us with like a list of titles, and they were all like that. It was like
generic.
The
things.
Boy Can't Stand It, and it was just all like it was just all these horrible like.
It's like in
What's New, Pussycat?
In All About Eve, like the plays that Bette Davis is in. She's like aged in wood. And you're like, I want to go see a play called Aged in Wood. Thank you. And it's like, written on the stars, or just one of these titles. You're just like, this means absolutely nothing.
I feel like before we continue any further, I have to ask for your feedback on Feud. I really feel you watched Feud.
Oh,
I feel
like you're a scholar. Did you watch
Feud? Here's the thing. I love that it existed.
Yeah.
I'm not even being political. I'm so glad that something knocked the Mommy Dearest perception of Joan Crawford. Why can't I come up with her name? Who? out of the... Because that was just a bold-faced lie.
Yeah.
I mean, Mommy Dearest is a drag show. It is kabuki theater. It's insanity. It's insanity.
Yeah.
And it is not... And it's like, I can't believe that Joan Crawford was a warm... tender, you know, lovely woman. She was not Diane Wiest, okay?
No.
No one is. There's only one, and that's Diane, motherfucking Wiest.
That's rule number 100 in sex of culture. There's only one Diane Wiest, and that's Diane fucking Wiest.
Yes. But she was a tough woman who was in a tough business and should have climb and claw. Talk about it clean. Talk about clean only. That's Joan Crawford. So I love that the show really humanized her.
Yes.
And I thought that, and I thought Jessica Lange did an amazing job of humanizing her and not really doing an impression of her.
No.
I thought Susan Sarandon looked exactly like Bette Davis, but had zero fire and zero music. I'll say it. Also, given, you know, in the world, you know,
tough.
Eat a dick, Susan. Sorry. Yeah. Bye. But I was so upset by her Bette Davis because I was like, that is the easiest thing to do. And I know you don't want to do a drag performance, but it was like, you're not even trying anything.
She only went there. She only went like 60% there.
This kind of tired, I don't want to be here. And I'm like, Bette Davis was never tired.
No.
Bette Davis is dead and still awake. Like she's still chewing at the earth around her.
Bette Davis is
so vital.
Yeah.
And to play her like that, and I just felt like I was just the whole time I was like watching her look like that. And then they reenacted scenes from Baby Jane that weren't like that. I was like, we know the movie, so at least do them when they were like on camera.
Bette Davis is practically screaming in Baby Jane.
And I also just think like the reason why, I know you want to bring people, make people real and humanize them, but a star is a star, especially from that era. And they were over the top.
That was
their reality. That was their truth.
Yep.
So to have them like that, I was just... So I was frustrated with it, to be quite honest.
That's a great answer.
However, I watched the whole thing, I totally would watch another one.
Yeah, 100%.
Because I love what he does. And thank God for making that.
Yes. Yeah. I will say I really enjoyed Susan Sarandon in the quieter moments. Like
in the final episode.
In the behind the scenes, quote unquote, moments where you didn't have Bette performing as Bette, because I agree it didn't match the reality of her.
Right.
I thought she acted the scenes well opposite Jessica when they were getting real. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I also don't think she was given too much. I think she had the Oscars episode where she really had a lot to do, but then the rest of it was kind of like very much the Jessica show.
Yeah.
But it was funny because the big moments that were supposed to be these like incomparable Bette moments, like when she walks onto the set for the first time in character as Baby Jane, I was like, that was supposed to feel bigger than it was.
That was supposed to be a moment. Yeah.
You can feel the direction doing something for Susan.
The scenes with Kiernan Shipka, I felt like we're just like...
What's your verdict on Kiernan Shipka?
She's fine. I'm saying Susan Sarandon acting opposite Kiernan Shipka.
No, I know, but I'm asking, what are your thoughts on Kiernan?
Do we have to have thoughts on Kiernan Shipka?
I think I think we do. And you know what else? Because they fucking won't stop shoving Millie Bobby Brown down our throats now.
Right. Well, that's true.
She's goddamn ubiquitous.
Yeah.
I'm going to save that for the end of the episode, if you know what I mean.
Set it, yeah.
I agree with you. That's a great assessment. And you and Aaron Jackson, do you know Aaron? He's a great New York comedian.
Why do I know his? I feel like
he's fantastic. You guys would get along.
He's on the opposition, that show on Comedy Central now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful person. Cool. He's another scholar of Bette. You guys would have an amazing conversation.
We had a good convo about that.
Totally. Okay. Let's talk about.
Okay. Sorry. My show. I got off track, and I'm like here to talk about my show.
It's so good. Okay.
Thank you, honey. Thank you. And it's definitely more of a play than if you saw it at Ars Nova.
Right.
It's more of a cabaret form, and now it's. It's a play. It's set on the night before a gay wedding in Palm Springs. Mm-hmm. I'm playing a character who's going through it in a real crisis.
Gary.
And he's going through a real crisis the night before, one of the grooms is one of his best friends from college. Mm-hmm. He's marrying somebody that he doesn't really approve of, and he's going to basically party and hold court and wreak havoc and ruin things the night before the wedding.
Yeah.
So I'm talking to pool furniture and chairs as if there are other people on stage with me.
And just, God, it's, I don't know. And this is just a very, like, superficial assessment, but, like, the way, and this is even back in Ars Nova, and that's why, and forgive me for, like, questioning this, like, the existence, existentially, if I should call it a player or whatever, because even in that space, like, you just, like, just spatially, it just was so, it was just so, God, I'm having such trouble finding the words, but it was just so, so compelling for to watch you. It was just so good.
It's really fun to do. I believe I have other people out there. My first director on the show when I was writing and put it together, Molly Prather in LA, had me rehearse with real people. So I rehearsed as if there were real people on stage, and that was unbelievable. And she also really helped with the writing. And then in this iteration, Michael Urey is directing. I don't know if we mentioned that. I think maybe we did earlier. Maybe I don't know. And just name him as much as we can on this episode.
Michael.
Michael
Urey. Hello. And so anyway, he has done this amazing job of fleshing it into a play, into a production.
Very cool.
And also given me so much advice as someone who's done a lot of solo shows himself, and also is just an incredible director. Like, he had a thought about a huge chunk of the piece last week when I was doing it in L.A. and said, try it this way, and had a whole different way of trying a whole section, and I think it's better than it's ever been.
Wow.
And I got to tell him yesterday when I saw him, I was like, it's working better than ever in this one section because of your insight. So he's constantly working on it about try this and play it this way, and he's just, you know, he's incredible. And so, but yeah, it's every night's a party, and it feels like I'm up there with people, and it feels different every night.
Yeah.
And it's just me up there, you know, getting really hammered. And just, you know, just going for it and swinging.
Oh, swinging high.
In a real way? By the end of the show, are you a little tipsy?
I wish. I wish I could.
Some people can.
Well, I mean, I take it as a compliment when people think I'm really getting hammered up there. But I was like, there's no way. I do have a 75-minute play in my head. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I
can't
sit up there and get like just, I mean, can you imagine the sheer narcissism / alcoholism of just being like, pay money, I'm going to get really hammered, and then I'm going to say things.
Yeah.
No responsibility from me. No, it's scripted, you know.
Totally. And it ends in such like, and I maybe this has changed since like the last iteration that I saw, but it ends in such a just like a really sobering place, I feel. Would you say that's still true?
Yeah, it ends. It's so, it's
I don't want to spoil too
much. It's the course of a night before the wedding, and it just gets real messy. And
the kernel of truth that I think you try to hit is with like equality, let's say, or with, you know, parity or assimilation into this, the, you know, culture of just like, okay, let's try to like have equality in the same way that straight people live through their lives. Like, what are we sort of losing in that?
And what are we gaining from participating in it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Right. And I really don't have an answer for that, but I wanted to raise those questions.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to say, not only what are we losing, but what do we stand to lose?
Exactly.
Because as, you know, you have gay kids coming out younger and younger, which is obviously a wonderful thing, and parents that are more and more supportive. The backlash is you have a lot of gay kids saying, I don't need to learn about my history.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to, and I'm not like that gay guy.
Yeah.
I'm not like this. I'm quote unquote normal.
Ugh.
And, you know, my sort of argument is normal is boring, and be bright and be bold and be out there and don't lose that. And you can have it all, and we should have it all, you know, like it's not a trade off to have equality, to also say I can't be queer anymore.
Right.
And I think my play is, as I've done it more, it's more about queerness than it is
about equality. Yeah.
It's about keeping that. And you know, and I'm actually playing a character who is who thinks he knows everything, who ends up learning himself from the younger character in the show a lot, I think. And, you know, so I wanted to just raise a lot of these questions, and I wanted very much to sort of make us remember, like, that this is not. Also, I feel like the second that marriage became, you know, legal, it was as if our culture told us that we all had to want that.
Right.
And that was the answer for all of us.
Yep.
Because now every gay magazine has a wedding section, and every, you know, and that was the thing that I was just like, this is crazy, because I kind of grew up never thinking this would happen.
Right.
And that's not healthy either, of course.
Sure.
And I ultimately would love to get married, and I would love to you know, to settle down and have a husband, and you know, but there's also part of me that's like loves being single, and I've seen the benefits of, you know, of you know, on both sides.
Sure.
And I think there's no right answer for anybody.
Well, that's the thing. It's like marriage is sort of noxious in that same way that it is in straight culture.
Absolutely.
Too.
And the coolest thing is when, you know, when I did it last year, having people, because, you know, once I started doing the play for audiences outside of, you know, necessarily the gay community, mm-hmm. and a lot of older people were coming, uh-huh. and I had an older couple come up to me after the show, and they were like, our friends got terrible when they got married too. And they were, it was this
it's
old
so
straight
true.
Couple, you know, and they
yeah,
wanted to talk about
so
marriage.
Funny.
And so, you know, I love the, you know, the conversations that yeah. it elicits at the end. And I wanted to play somebody who, I also wanted to make our audiences see this gay guy, because
yeah.
we don't see this guy. Mm-hmm. We write, and to what we were talking about earlier, we write really idealized. We want to see beautiful gay people mm-hmm, on TV. Mm-hmm. We want to see straight yep. acting, whatever that means, but we know what it means, gay yep. people on TV. We want to see sassy mm-hmm. Gay people on TV who aren't at all dangerous.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I wanted to write that big, loud nightmare
right.
that we're afraid of being,
yeah.
that we maybe have been at times, that we definitely all know.
Right.
And that's why I purposely made it a solo show, because I could have easily cast actors in the role, but I was like, if you have to just look at this guy, you're trapped at a party with this guy, you know?
But what's amazing is, and even like calling him a loud gay guy is doing a disservice, because it's a loud gay guy who is like reckoning with himself. And that yeah. that's the whole sort of arc of the play. And yeah, it's just fantastic. It's so
well,
good.
Thank you. I mean, I wanted to write my dream role, and I was,
yeah.
a lot mm-hmm. of it is me. A lot of it has me in it, and a lot of it is not me at all.
Yeah.
And it's fun to sort of play with the line in between those things.
Yeah.
A lot of the facts are completely made up, and a lot of the stories are, I lived every second of them
sure.
that
mm-hmm.
are in there. And then, you know, but I also, it was like, I love Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf.
Right.
I love, mm-hmm. you know, I love what the, you know, the big drunk, I'm going to tell you the truth, the August Osage County. I love that stuff. And I'm like,
yeah.
I want to write that part for myself.
That's like any
you know?
Good solo show or any good one man or one woman show. It's half based
yeah.
in real truth and half aspirational. This is what I wrote for myself to get
yeah,
out of this
I
experience
think so.
On
I mean,
stage.
I always thought, you know, I remember reading about how to write. There's a playwright, Jose Rivera, who's a genius. And he wrote, I have to say he's a friend. It'd be weird if he heard this and was like, why didn't he say you know me? Anyway, he's amazing. But he wrote something for American Theater about like rules of writing a play. And
uh-huh.
the one thing I remember the most was you need to have one thing in the play that's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Have one thing in the play that people go, I can't believe that. Have one magical piece.
Uh-huh.
And I have mine in the show. And after you see that, there's one thing that I'm like, that's actually technically impossible. That's my like, because I was like, I want some things in there that you're like, that can't be true.
Right.
And then
yeah.
I want other things in there that are like, that's of course that's true.
Yes.
And then I want people to not know in between. And
right.
That's what I enjoy watching. So I also, I just made something that I would want to go watch.
Yes.
Well, that's the thing that I think that's the thing that I love about this play is that it's so grounded. It lives in realism, but it's so fun. You somehow manage to not make that boring. Like, it's still
oh,
so
thank you.
Fun and carbonated and all this great stuff. Am I making this up? Did you have a line about, do you still have that line about Gene Triplehorn? Did you ever have a line about Gene Triplehorn in it?
Not in that.
Okay, never
not
mind.
In that
never
show.
Mind.
I don't think ever.
No, you know
that
what?
Was in a Chloe video.
That's a Chloe video.
Yeah,
you know
I mentioned
sorry.
Gene Triplehorn in a Chloe
thank
video.
Thank God, because just hearing the name Gene Triplehorn is
isn't
like a
that amazing?
Beautiful
I remember
feeling.
When Basic Instinct came out.
Uh-huh.
And I saw the opening credits, and it was like, Gene Triplehorn.
What a goddamn
name. I was like,
damn
who
name.
Is
good
that
name.
Bitch?
Yes.
And I loved her immediately just
yeah,
based
yeah,
on that
yeah.
name. What does that even... Triplehorn.
Gene Triplehorn. Even in a movie with a name like Sharon Stone, we
yeah,
remember
yeah, you know,
Gene
you're,
Triplehorn.
Like, sorry, Sharon.
It's truly...
Oh, my God.
Now, could it be the Gene Triplehorn connection in Big Love that connected us to Chloe? And that is...
Oh, sure.
I want to know, because these really... These were game changers for us watching it when we first discovered your Chloe videos.
Oh.
What is it about Chloe Sevigny? Like... Take us through.
Well, it started because I realized I looked like her when I looked in a mirror and I was like, I look like Chloe 70. And I also
was obsessed.
And it was like when her first like indie movie started to come out, I was in college. I'm just a few years younger than her. And so like she was starting to hit in her early 20s when I was in my late teens. And I was just always following her and I was fascinated by her world. And I grew up in small town North Carolina. And I was reading Interview Magazine and Time Out and everything. I was obsessed with New York and L.A. culture, and I had none of it at my fingertips. Right. And this was back in the 90s, magazines. And she represented the coolest downtown culture. I was like, wherever she was where the party was. And so it was always, she was just kind of always somebody that I knew she was. And, you know, and then it just sort of, it was this perfect storm when I was doing a sketch show 15 years ago.
Yeah. Oh,
and shit. I looked in the mirror and I said, I look like this actress, Chloe 70. I knew exactly who she was.
Right.
I put her up on stage. I was in a gay sketch comedy troupe called The Deviants in 2002. And our director hated it. He was like, what is this? And who is she? And then I showed him a picture of Chloe 70 and he's like, well, you don't really look like her. And he was like,
oh my God.
I was like, and I was name dropping all these things because I'd read an interview with
Obsessed.
Her where she was name dropping all this stuff. And I was like, no one gets these references. And I think that's the point.
Yeah.
The point is not like for you to really be impressed. It's for you to not even know the ether that you're sniffing. It's like you don't even know this flavor.
And her plus
and
one.
So I was like, that is so fascinating to me and funny. And I also was at the same time reading Bret Easton Ellis. I was reading American Psycho and Glamorama, and I've ripped off of Bret Easton Ellis horribly.
That's
as a writer.
Such a funny,
because it's Bret Easton Ellis. It's the way he would write his books, and I was reading, and so I was just like, what about just list comedy?
That's
where you just list it, and there's no emotion attached to it whatsoever. Did you have fun at the party? Yes, because so and so were there. We ate the following things, this is what we were wearing, and then it was over. And you're like, you didn't describe a single emotional
it was just
human
status.
Experience. It's just status, and that's it.
Yeah.
And that was just funny to me because I was like, that's so crazy. So I put it up on stage.
Yep.
It bombed so badly.
Oh my God.
I got zero laughs. I had the driest mouth. I remember how dry my mouth was and how embarrassed I was to get up and do it.
Oh my God.
And no one was laughing. And I was saying, and I was referencing things, and I was saying Tilda Swinton, and I was referencing like Bat Cave and all these like weird, you know, New York places that are no longer here. And I insisted on doing it the next week in the show, and my director was like, we're pulling it, Drew. It was the biggest bomb. He's like, Drew, you have so many other things, and this was so, and I go, please let me try it one more time.
Oh wow.
And I don't know why I jumped in the fire a second time, and it went well the second time.
It did.
And I never knew until the videos came out. I never knew if it was gonna, it would either be one or the other. It would never go medium.
Yep.
It would either kill or it would die, and there was no in between. And then Jim Hansen, my friend years ago, was like, you know,
video.
Jim, yes. Yeah. And he was like, I want to make these into videos. Mm. And then that's when they really just took off. And I resisted it for so long because I was like, I'm not a drag queen.
This
is a bit.
Yeah.
This is a one-off thing.
Sure.
It sometimes goes well. It sometimes doesn't go well.
Right.
I didn't want to do it for so long.
And you wanted on your own terms to be like, I don't necessarily want to be known for this specific thing.
Right.
I
had no, I had no interest in that happening. Yeah. And then when it did, thank God it did, because I had no, it was my entrance into the world, as they say, but thank God for the internet and thank God for Jim Hansen and saying these need to be videos, because that's how I got to do so many other things.
Yeah.
And to this day, and now I'm really proud of it, and I'm very, it's something that I'm very touched if people, I can't believe people still watch them, because it's like YouTube and you're like, don't things go away on YouTube, you know, it's like, but it really makes my day when people say
it
that
holds
they like
up
them.
It holds
too.
Up so
it
well.
It holds up. Like, what other video from like,
from 2010,
that long
let's
ago,
say.
Like, can you still watch and be like, this is still funny? You know what I mean? All the like big sketch videos of that time, it's like you watch them now and you're like, oh God, there's like something
horribly.
Shitty about them, or like, revelation that they're problematic in some way.
Oh right,
but
oh
like,
right. I can't wait to find that when Chloe becomes problematic.
I don't know if it will for
it
a while.
It never will. It can't. I'll fight.
It's a timeless
fight that to the death.
No, the fact that Bret Easton Ellis is like that that sort of formal inspiration of just like list comedy is so enlightening. And I've been so curious to know what's been the well of specifics and like almost non sequiturs for those videos where it's like, appreciate like things like appreciate the casual arrogance of Tuesday Weld, like how do you come, like that stayed with me, that string, that sequence of words has stayed with me for like that long. Well, and like
part of me is like there's a real disgusting part of me that can slide into that too easily.
Yeah, I love it.
Like I can read something and just and I you know, I love reading food reviews. Like, that's a real inspiration. God. I read the LA Weekly and I'm Village Voice, so you guys get, you know, it's
sure,
the same.
Sure.
But the way they will describe a meal that sounds so disgusting, and yet it's like high end. And I've always loved, you know, words are really important to me. And so and also names. Anybody that has an offbeat name.
Yes.
That sounds like Gene Triplehorn.
Gene Triplehorn, yes. Harmony Korine. Like
Kiernan
Shipka.
Harmony
Korine.
I mean, you know, yeah, exactly. And so you have a name like that, and I'm like, that's interesting. So I sort of, you know, and a lot of it was when Jim and I would get together, we would just sit and we would sound out. We're like, what sounds good? I was like, I'm going to say this to you, and how does it scan?
Yep, yeah.
Because there's some names and you're like, that doesn't sound as much of a punch as when you say, you know. So it's a lot of trial and error. And
the
then
best
that's
is
a linguistic
when,
thing.
The best is when, like, years later, you'd hear the name and you'd find out who they were. Like, Tinsley Mortimer is now a cast member on Real Housewives. And I was like, I literally sat at the studio. I was like, Tinsley Mortimer, tell me about what that person is, because that's a thing from my past I have to have confirmed. But Tinsley Mortimer and her plus one, that was just something from back annals of my mind.
But I think it's beyond, because I'm very like, I make a point, because I don't like when people want to trash the real Chloe 70 to me, because I'm like,
oh no,
she's great. And also she's Chloe 70, she's unique, she's awesome,
untouchable.
Absolutely.
And talented.
But she is. And I think my character is the kind of, we all know that person. And I think, what happened for me luck-wise, like timing-wise, was that we started to get that hipster culture started to come up.
Yep.
And we all knew that person at the party who was name-dropping who they were and whatever. I mean, you know, and I was, you know, and a few years after I was doing it, you know, Stefan showed up on SNL.
Right.
And that was like Bill Hader's character, which is so funny. And it's like, I think people just start to realize like that we just know that type of person.
Yes.
Whereas it didn't maybe, not in this form.
But I think with Chloe, like, I think you gave us like a mental model for like how to poke fun at that in like a comedic way, because I feel like
we all know that socialite that like in
totally.
Like in The Great Gatsby, what's her, is it Jordan Baker, the one that who's just at the party and always just like grand,
the one who gets hit by the car, the one who dies, the one who Gatsby,
I think that's Myrtle. I think Myrtle
gets
hit
by the car. That's Myrtle. Yeah.
Oh God, we're going deep. Oh,
we're going back to Great Gatsby. I feel like, but I don't know if this is fair to say for you, but I feel like, and I don't mean for this to sound like super, like whatever, cloying. I'll say again, but for me, it's informed a lot of my sensibility.
Definitely.
Because, like, you know, we'll do characters that are just,
God,
like,
guys.
I'll be like, oh, you know what? I'm going to write, quote-unquote, a Michiko Kakutani impression, quote-unquote.
Which
and
she
it's,
has.
And it's just, like, her, like, it's she's really, like, she has this voice. It's, like, not, a, like, what is a Michiko Kakutani
right.
impression? But
yeah,
it's
yeah.
her just,
sure.
like, shitting on all these authors. And, like, the specificity, like, the more obscure the author is, the funnier it is. And I was like, oh, but I've seen this be successful before with the Chloe videos.
Oh, wow.
You know?
Honestly, yeah. I think we watched those videos in a time where we were starting to find our...
Developing,
and it was very, very helpful.
God,
it was a big
you.
Inspiration
that
on us.
So
and I think
sweet.
A lot of gay comics, and also, like... our straight friends who get it.
Mm, yeah, they
know?
Get it. They
when someone
it,
gets
right?
it.
They get it.
I have a question. Have you ever spoken with Chloe Sevigny?
I have. Yeah? I met her years ago at a party. And I it was one of those things. I walked in the door and I had no idea she was going to be there.
Uh-huh.
And, oh my God.
And I got super nervous because I'd realized I had never thought of what I would say to her had I met her.
Sure.
And I felt like I have to say something, but I don't know what I'm going to say. She was really nice. It was super weird. I got out of there really quickly because I didn't want her to think I was studying.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to make her uncomfortable. She since did an interview. Like, I did a couple. They like, talked about me later and said that, you know, she met me. She was, he was so nervous to meet me and
oh,
all
God.
This stuff. And like he thought I hated it. I'm like, I don't. Here's the thing. I am that's why I always will say I'm an actor before I'm a comedian.
Yeah.
And not from any place other than I really like, I don't enjoy
it implies
making
malice.
People.
Yeah.
Yes. And I will own the fact. I mean, you know, I'm my very first video, I make a really shitty dig at Natasha Lyonne that I'm not proud of, and people, you know, whatever. And I don't like that. I didn't know that when the videos were going to happen, they were going to be so big.
Sure.
I had no clue. It was the thing I was doing on stage.
Yep, yep, yep.
And not to give myself, not to be like, I'm a victim in this, but I do feel, I do feel bad.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of people have said, don't feel bad. It's funny. It's a joke. And I'm like, it's just not where I come from.
Right.
I don't come from a place of like, I want to, you know, like
make a point,
punch somebody when they're down.
Yeah.
And Natasha Lyonne was in a really bad place. And I made a personal dig at her. And I don't feel good about that. And I love Natasha Lyonne. She's fucking amazing.
Yeah, she truly is.
Yeah.
And so that when Chloe started to take off, like I was like, and also it was more interesting to me to create my entire own universe.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it was like,
it's sort of divorced from who
Chloe,
she is.
You know, in my videos, like Chloe goes to the moon.
Yeah.
You know, Chloe, you know, discovers she has grandparents.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
like, it's not the real Chloe Sevigny. And so it's like, and that to me is so much more free.
It is.
And so I never want to. So when I meet the real person, I'm like, I feel like I don't want to make them uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I was also like, other people coming up and watching us and taking pictures of us, I'm like, it's putting her on the spot.
Sure.
I've been asked to do so many things that I've turned down because I'm like, I mean, I got asked one time by someone that on a movie she was in to ambush her on the red carpet at opening night of her movie.
Oh,
as
no.
Chloe, and I was like, I would never do that.
No,
like,
no.
First of all, I'm not like, I'm good with what I'm doing. I'm doing other stuff.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm not so desperate.
To
do that. And also, I would never, on a human level, I would never do that to somebody. That is horrible.
It's also
to be like, and I said, if I hear from her that she signed off on it, I'll do a bit with her.
Yeah.
Right.
And of course, they never call me back because they're like, no, that's not the point.
Way.
And it's like this, you know, these are some real bottom feeders in here. I'm like, I would never be on the side of like, you know, paparazzi and trying to make her, because it's like, that is so not what I'm about.
Sure.
It's just so much more playful and you know, and I don't know. It's like,
no,
I don't want to
the way you're
mean.
Talking about this makes it sound like, I mean, no, you are putting more thought and consideration into that treatment than you're putting the exact, I mean, no, I'm just saying, like, you are, that's untouchable. You can't really like poke holes in that and be like, well, it is a little bit of a like a
no it's not about
it's
her
not,
it's a character
it's not, it's not and it is it's like about the culture and it's about the world of the and also like, you know, hey, it's like we do what we do. I want to be responsible for what I create and
right.
not for like tearing somebody else down.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
That's not the intent of it.
It's like, I want to be like, please feel free to be like, it's, you know, if you don't like it or you think it's dumb, whatever, fine, but I don't want it to be like I'm out for blood. Also, there are so many villains in the world.
So many villains.
Yeah.
Chloe 70 is not one.
Yeah,
you know
not,
what I mean? Like, come
never,
on.
You've never even punched up or down or even like in any direction.
Or all around.
Or all around. Around. It's just
I'll
so
punch
unique.
Wild.
Punch
wild. Punching wild. No, that's like also impersonation. You know what I mean? It's like no one's, unless you're out there doing like a fucking, and you're an impressionist nailing who this person is at their core. That's like what comedic impersonation is. It's like referencing the person, making a choice whether it has actually something to do with them or not. It doesn't really matter.
So
it's
I'm
a
not
reference.
A good, I'm not a good impressionist. Like I always, I mean, I studied the Groundlings and they were really big into like get an idea of their point
right.
of view and
yeah,
play
yeah.
a character based on their
mm-hmm.
perspective. And I always mm-hmm. liked that. And I was like, that's what I can do. And that's more free and fun to me than doing a dead on impression that's
yeah,
like
yeah, yeah.
you know. But when I have played people, like, I mean, I did for a while, I was doing Ann Coulter and I hated it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I really don't want to do it anymore because I was like, she's awful.
Yeah.
And the second I come out, it's like I get a laugh because it's like, oh, I walk out on stage, it's like it's a man in drag and it's Ann Coulter. The second I open my mouth, the audience is like, ugh, go away.
Yeah.
You
oh,
suck.
Wow.
You know, and it's just no fun. And I'm like, it's different, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah. One thing that I still remember from that workshop that my friend Billy and I took.
Oh, my God. I love that you were in that workshop.
I know.
That I taught. That's
it was great. And you really
you
did.
You guys were very sweet coming up afterwards.
Oh, yeah. We took. There's
I don't remember talking about Jerry Blank, though. We did?
You you brought up Jerry Blank as an example of, and this is what you said, and this is what I wanted to bring up, is that, like, your favorite characters, and I feel like we both agree, Matt and I both agree, your favorite characters are people who are, like, not totally self-aware of their limitations.
Yes, yes, completely.
Like, with, like,
absolutely.
Jerry, for example, thinking she's, like, some sexual goddess.
Yes.
And you know, and that's not necessarily the case. I mean, she's a sexual being for sure, but, like, it's just the part of the humor.
You don't have to, like, just... You know,
I,
like,
know, I know,
look,
I know.
I'm sure she'd be attracted to some people.
She's a human being. She has sex. I mean,
sometimes, I don't know. No, it is. It's true. Yeah, people.
That's, like, it's a funny
that
thing.
To me was, that was something that I also, excuse me, I also learned at the Groundlings, was that unawareness was their comedic flaw.
Right.
Was the
yes.
thing that they don't know
Absolutely.
About.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And you play up on that because they see themselves one way,
mm-hmm.
and the audience sees them another way.
Yeah.
And you can't really judge them when you're playing them because then they become unlikable. They become mean. They become evil. They're not fun to play when you're like, you know, So. Yeah, it's always like finding that thing in the character and go, well, how do they see themselves versus how the rest of them see them?
And you can feel as a performer too when you're doing the character when you feel disconnected from it or not. And that usually does have to do with the idea of, like, am I actually playing their truth or not? You can be fucking horrible. As long as you're playing their truth and you could feel good. I've been playing Paul Ryan, like a version of Paul Ryan.
Yes.
And I'll read the script and I'll be like, yeah, it's good. And then sometimes I'll perform it and I'll be like, oh, this part actually feels a little sad or mean. And then, like, you have to reconcile, especially when you're playing a real person, when there's real stakes for people.
Yes.
It can be sometimes hard when you're living in New York or LA and you make a joke about how, you know, Paul Ryan's like, his tax plan will, like, really hurt people and they'll have to, like, work three jobs not be able to drive because of their cataracts in their eyes and they don't have health care. And you're fucking cracking up about it in New York and then, like, you realize this is going to hit people in a certain place.
Absolutely.
And you're like, holy shit, wow, this doesn't feel great.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. So it's
and
it's
also,
a balance.
Like, comedically, you're like, what is the thing about Paul Ryan that is even driving that?
Right.
You know,
right.
Does he find himself so hot or,
I think,
like,
it's vanity.
Smooth and vanity? Yeah, I would guess that.
Rooted in privilege and vanity.
So when you have that and maybe how, like, I'm doing everyone a favor and you're welcome, you know, then that's where the fun part comes in. Because then we can all go, oh, wow.
Because we can laugh at the human thing about him.
Yes.
When it's the monstrous thing about him, you're like, wow, that's monstrous.
Right. And then you're just commenting. Then you're just preaching in the choir and you're not really being a comedian as much as you're being like, you know, a rabble rouser and going, well, we all agree. Like, he's terrible. Like, you know, and then it's like finding the thing where you go, oh, wow, that's so.
There's
you know.
A glimpse.
Yeah.
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 Wow. Character workshop from Drew Drogi himself.
No, but it's really fascinating, too. It's like when you watch, like, Saturday Night Live now, like, the impersonations on that show that separate the good from the bad for me, I do think there's one big one that I don't love, which is Alec Baldwin's Trump.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Is it's just this disgusting portrayal of a disgusting person. You're like, what is there more here? It doesn't seem like there is.
Yeah, it's hard. It's really hard. I think right now too, like us living in the reality show every day. I think it's hard to be separate from it and watch it.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Totally.
But then you see a Tamminix Trump.
Oh,
and
it's genius.
It's a whole other level. It's so much better because it puts
he's genius.
Truly brilliant. And it's playing a reality we don't see on SNL.
Right.
Anyway.
I know. And Tony's amazing.
He's so brilliant. I think it's time to move on to I Don't Think So,
okay,
Honey.
Okay. Time.
So is the moment, Drew, where we take 1 minute to rail against something in culture. We should say on November 18th, you guys, we are going to have I Don't Think So, Honey live at the Bell House. We have 50 comedians all lined up. That you haven't seen on our live shows before. These are 50 brand new comics they're going to do, and I Don't Think So, Honey. It's going to be very fun at the Bell House at 10 p.m. as part of Brooklyn Podcast Festival.
Yes.
So we're so excited about that. That's next week. We're going to take each of our respective minutes right now to rail against culture, and I have one.
You have one?
You
okay.
have one.
Let's start with Matt.
Let's
okay. Matt will go, then me, and so Drew can sort of get the sense of how this is done.
I love it.
Great.
And
love
then
he'll do one himself. This is Matt Rogers' I Don't Think So, Honey. His time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey. all of you trying to shove Millie Bobby Brown down our throats. I don't think so, honey. Bitch, also, you need to start dressing her age appropriate. I saw her walk out from a talk show the other day. She looked like a fucking 35-year-old magazine editrix. She was dressed like a fucking bitch. And she is a 13-year-old girl. That's Stranger Things. I don't think so, honey. Wow. Bitch, let me tell you something. Don't try to Emma Watsonize this girl just yet. Let's get through more than two seasons of a fucking show before we can make a commitment to this girl, bitch. CAA, come on. Oh. You have her on every goddamn show. She is ubiquitous, honey, and we need to take a breath and think, do we want to do this? Because there might be no turning back. She's a talented girl, honey, but I don't think it fucking matters. Can she do more than 11? We don't know. Give her the opportunity. Yes, she is a charming guest on these talk shows.
5 seconds.
Yes, she certainly slayed a rap on Jimmy Fallon, but also, why is this white bitch rapping? I don't think so, honey.
And that's 1 minute.
Yes.
Wow, bravo.
I'm saying Millie Bobby Brown.
Edatrix.
She looked like fucking Miranda Priestley.
Oh, my God.
She had little tiny glasses and a fucking yellow suit, and I was like, this bitch is 13 years old.
I love that you're like over her and also want to give her a chance.
You know what?
Because I think it's complicated. Yeah. I think both are valid.
Here's the thing. You have to let her.
Let her be her.
You have to let her sink into this. Like,
sure.
Throwing her out there at 13 years old, she's had massive success. I think, you know, she very nearly won that Emmy. I think very close. Yeah. I think it was a toss-up, actually, because I thought Tandy Newton was taking that shit.
Uh-huh.
And who won? Supporting actress drama?
I don't remember.
Oh my God, why am I forgetting her name? Hulu. She said Hulu.
Legend.
Ann Dowd.
And so you know what that makes me think? Because Ann Dowd.
You said legend. I was like, Mia Sara? God, where's my head?
Ann Dowd is like not a household name by any means. So that makes me feel like it must have been a very close race.
Ann Dowd, Millie, and
I think there were Tandy fans. I think there were Chrissy Metz fans from This Is Us.
Oh, sure.
I think there were fucking Millie Bobby Brown fans. And I think there were Ann Dowd fans. I think that was like a fucking race. But anyway, Millie Bobby Brown, I'm just saying it's early to make her this A-list star.
Is it sort of this like, it's everything?
I'll tell you
it's
the
all reaching?
Is,
no, no, no. Or is it like her stylist that you want to like take
No.
With?
Her stylist is part of it because they're trying to dress her like this 20s
like a star.
Ingenue. And I'm like, girl, she's 13 years old.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
She's not, not that like we're critiquing the way they dress these people, but you know, she looks like the kind of Hollywood fashion icon.
It speaks to like the larger her treatment. Like you brought CAA into this. I can't believe.
Yeah. Yes. It's the ubiquity. That will, I think, if they're not careful, affect her performances.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have to let her kind of, you know, how much do you change between 13 and 18? You have to let her go through that. Like, let's not fucking Hollywood her.
Let's not dehumanize her.
Yeah, let's not, like, do something to her, which maybe we did to, you know, some of these other younger actresses that got confused and, you know, fucked up. You know what I mean? Let's let her, if she's truly talented girl and special talent, like,
and
I don't know.
Time will tell. We just have no way. We have no way of knowing.
Yeah.
You just see them separate her from the boys on the cast a lot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's like, we got the cast of Stranger Things and it'll be the boys. And then it's like Millie Bobby Brown is like this separate thing. And if I was the agent of the other kids, I'd be like, hold on. If she's going to be doing her own thing, my kid with the cute little gap in his teeth and the shaggy hair, well, he's not going to go on this interview with the rest of them. Book him by himself, too.
Uh-huh. He's pretty special, too.
He's so special and an amazing singer.
His video of him singing.
So adorable.
At that karaoke when he's singing Les Mis is just
incredible.
Blow you apart. Oh, yeah.
Wow, yeah,
wow. Well, he's Gatton Matarazzo.
Yeah,
Matarazzo.
Yeah,
what a
name.
Star.
Sure.
All right,
that's a Chloe specific for you.
Oh, for sure.
And Gatton Matarazzo.
Here we go. This
Millie
is my
Bobby
turn.
Brown is one too. Fuck.
Oh, of course.
This is Bowen Yang's I Don't Think So, Honey. His time will start now.
I Don't Think So, Honey. People who are not equally gagged for Alfre Woodard's part in The Lion King.
Yes!
There are two female leads and the one who's playing the hyena too.
Sarabi!
Yes. Well, no. Sarabi, Alfre Woodard. We have not given Alfre Woodard a chance since that fucking DC show with Katherine Heigl. That was her last big thing. Am I right?
Yes, honey.
We need to give Alfre another chance, and I think this is so refreshing. And you guys, we need the children have forgotten Alfre Woodard.
Alfre.
And she could even make season two of Desperate Housewives 30 seconds. Tolerable. And she...
Betty Applewhite.
Betty Applewhite, bitch. And she had that son who was violent.
Matthew Applewhite.
Matthew Applewhite. She locked him in the basement. And look,
it
she...
was him.
That was what a campy-ass season of TV that she made fun and entertaining, but still grounded in that emotion. She can stare at a fucking camera down the fucking barrel, and I'd be fucking shivering in my boots. Shivering, you know what I mean? Shaking in my boots.
5 seconds.
I can't find the words, but you know what? I have the emotion because I love Alfre Woodard, and I can't wait to see her voice a lioness.
That's 1 minute. Wait a minute. She will voice Sarabi, honey. I said, you're part of my tribe if you are most gagged for Alfre Woodard.
Absolutely.
In that
have
film.
You seen Passion Fish?
No.
Oh my God, you've got to see Passion Fish.
Is that's like classic Alfre.
John Sayles
classic
movie Alfre. With Mary McDonnell. It's oh my God, it's amazing.
And I gotta.
And there's an amazing monologue.
Okay.
I didn't ask for the anal probe.
Oh
people
my God.
People that know that will know it. There's an amazing monologue by a girl you don't even see. You've got to watch this movie.
Okay,
it's
okay.
Great. You will lose
Passion
your mind.
Fish. Let's go.
It was like, it was the indie, the 90s. Everyone's
yes.
like, Alfre
yes.
Woodard is amazing.
Do you know the movie Heart and Souls?
Oh, yeah, sure. The musical.
Touches My Heart.
Oh, yeah, I love it.
Okay, so now it's time.
Okay, mine's, here we go. I'm not even gonna qualify.
There's no right or wrong way.
No, this is Drew Drogi's I Don't Think So, Honey.
Okay.
Time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey, and I'm not saying this as some 2007 YouTube has been. I used to be in Things That Matter. I've said 3 lines on New Girl. I'm the hot shit. I do shows in the basement of a fucking Mexican restaurant in L.A. I'm not saying at this point, but I don't think so, honey. Don't expect me to always remember you every fucking inch of the day and everywhere
Whoa,
I go.
Yes,
you know,
on.
I'm sorry when you go out.
Yes.
And I'm not saying that. I'm saying this as a human being.
Yes,
I don't expect anyone to remember me
30 seconds.
When I go out. So it's like it is a thing when you were coming up. And if I reintroduce myself, give me your goddamn
yep.
name.
Yeah, 100%.
No attitude. Don't tell me we've met.
We've met
oh,
before.
Have we?
Hate that.
Have we? Be more interesting.
Ah!
Here's a choice. Make, you know, do something. Because now I'll remember 15
seconds.
You. Bitch, now I'll remember you. From
yeah.
now on, we have met. And you know what? I don't think so, honey.
Yes.
All right? Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Wow. With 7 minutes, with 7 seconds to spare, it doesn't matter. You know what? The point has been made, bitch.
Cogently.
It's so true.
I get so irritated by that. When
yeah.
people, and it's like we're out, and you're like, here's the thing. And I'm not even saying it from a place of like, I'm so important. We are all, every one of us, is online.
Mm-hmm.
We're all on TV. We're all on media.
We're on media.
We all of us.
Yes.
Every single. And I'm saying everyone listening to this. We're all on things. You see pictures of people on dating apps and on Facebook and on, you know, Instagram, whatever. So we see each other at all different times and
yes.
spaces. And also you don't know you're in a you know and. We cannot be. Our brains
it's
are not
possible.
Wired.
We have
to
not
remember.
Evolved to that. We are. We're,
and so when yeah. they imply that you're being a bad person, because the other thing too,
Ugh.
Like there are times that I will remember meeting somebody, and I'm like, they're not going to remember me, so I'll reintroduce myself.
Yes.
And if they and they make it weird. I'm like, you know what? That's on you.
Yeah.
I'm just let's just
you're
let's
meeting
start
them halfway.
Over.
Yeah.
Right.
Honestly, you were right too because you don't forget, and forever those people that do that to me that are like, we've met actually,
uh-huh.
I will never forget that
oh,
you
yeah.
acted like
and
that.
And now you don't want me to remember you in this way.
Nope.
Because now you've switched over.
There's a couple people I deal with now more than I was before, and they acted like that, and I'll never get over
Can
it.
Can I make the argument that there is a nice way to do that though? Because
absolutely
I've done this before. It's like
100%.
It's like, oh hi, oh actually, I think we've met before, though.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think
That's
we
so
met
different.
At this thing. It was
that
crowded.
That is so different. It's,
yeah.
it is, there's such a different thing when you can say, you know, we met at so-and-so,
we
so-and-so,
met, yeah,
and
yeah,
at
yeah.
the party, and but and you know, and but, and
right.
they're like, oh, it's so nice to see you again. Even
yes.
if you don't remember, the thing is, it's like, it's such a dance every time you leave the house. Can you even get it all together to leave the house? You know? So you're going out, and you're seeing people, and you're just like, you know, but when they say we've met and they imply that like you're too good.
How dare you not hold
or they're like,
keep
yeah, several times.
Yeah, whatever.
And it's just a thing where you're like, I guess I'm in trouble.
Ugh.
Also, like, what do you want from me right now? Do you want to shame me from that?
What
and,
is the
I
penance?
Think they do want
you know?
To.
And there's a they might. And it's
yeah.
like that's on them. But it's like I don't feel bad. The takeaway is it doesn't hurt my feelings when it happens, but you did not make me feel bad.
No.
You just
right.
were an asshole to me.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
yeah.
there's a, you know, it's like, I didn't go, oh man, I need you to remember so and so. It's like, no, so and so sucks. So now I remember,
I
you
think,
know,
yep.
so and so.
Yep.
On the set of Tommy Doo's short film, Mask Only, which you just see.
Which is so great, which
so
is
great.
Starring Bowen Yang.
Which Drew Drogi directed. On the set, I went up to Drew. I go, "Hi, it's we were reintroduced," and I think I even just I hope I didn't do. Well, no, what I, my memory
but
was.
I knew who you were too. I don't know if yes. I remember the US the USC thing, but
exactly.
I knew you.
But, anyway. But I went up to you and I was like, and actually, I think I like my friend Billy and I took a workshop of yours at USC years ago, so it's nice to see you again.
Yeah,
I don't. But like that's.
That was lovely.
I'll put myself up as an example.
You did a really good job, Bo, yes. And that was really good. I don't think so, honey.
There you go. Oh, my God.
Trying to gain favor.
But the thing is, too, it's nice to remind people of yes. how you met because yeah. then it's like, you know, because it's weird if you don't sometimes, and sometimes
it's something in common.
But, like, don't go out of your way to make a moment awkward
yes.
for someone.
There
is that
no
is just the point.
Absolutely.
Like,
there's no filing system in the brain for us to keep up with all these fucking names. We've only evolved to know, like, 30 max names at a given time because of tribal whatever.
That's
okay.
Culture. We've only evolved to that point.
There you go. And, well,
and, we, and you know, and we got Gene Triplehorn.
Yeah,
we got Karen and Shipka.
We got too many names to memorize.
Too many names.
We need to know. What's his name?
Gatton Matarazzo. We
yeah.
need to remember that Mercedes yeah. Ruel won an Academy Award.
Yes.
Mercedes Tuesday Weld.
Come
Tuesday
on.
Weld. Oh, come on. There we go. We've learned so many things this episode.
Unbelievable.
Drew, thank you so much for coming
thank
on.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Truly,
please
like,
come
an
see
honor
the show anytime.
Us.
Please come anytime you want to come see
oh,
it.
Absolutely.
We'll
and tell the kids where they can see it.
So you can go on brightcolorsandboldpatterns.com mm-hmm. and all the info is there. It's also, we have tickets on like Today Ticks and all that stuff as well, but it's at the Soho Playhouse.
Yeah,
we open November 12th mm-hmm. and we're running through January 7th, so come there check us go. Out over the holidays and
bring mom you know. In for Christmas
yes.
day honey
yes bring mama
Christmas day
and have your mom go up to Drew after the show and just
and say we've met
say we've met and then whine about all this, the gay couples that she knows now too, the gay married couples. Oh my god. This has been Las Culturistas with Drew Drogi. I'm Bowen Yang
and I'm Matt Rogers and this has been wonderful, guys. Thank you so much.
Let's end with a song.
Oh, let's
as
end
we
with
always
song.
Do now.
There's Gatton and Tuesday and Tinsley and
Mortimer
and Drew
Drogi.
Bye.
Bye.
Forever Dog. This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram at Forever Dog Team and liking our page on Facebook.
So get your ass to the show. It's I Don't Think So Honey Live, November 18th. That's a Saturday at 10 p.m. as part of the Brooklyn Podcast Festival.
See you there.
Yeah.